Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. How are you, Tim?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Well, I was doing well, Tim, until I realized that we may be in the midst of monsters in this state. So if Minnesota doesn't have enough weird stuff, Bigfoot abounds. Well, at least that's the idea, I guess. People have been having Bigfoot encounters in Minnesota. I've heard about it up in the Iron Range area and up north.
I hear Reamer is a big area.
Reamer?
Reamer is a big area for Bigfoot.
Where's Reamer?
Up over by Deer.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the clarity on that.
Yeah.
Well, joining us is a man who knows about Bigfoot, knows about the cryptids. He's had experiences of his own and continues to investigate claims. He's part of the Minnesota Bigfoot research team, and he's here, our own monster man himself, Michael Hexum. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey there.
How are you today, sir?
Good, good. Wide awake and ready to go.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us. Now, you've had experiences with what you believe to be a Bigfoot. What age did that start for you?
Oh, I actually seen one off a deer stand. I was about 14 years old, and it walked out into a shooting lane and stared at me about 30 feet away. That was my first experience.
All right.
No doubt in my mind.
What time of day was this? Was it early morning? Was it late at night? What can you tell us about the parameters of that moment?
Actually, it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was partly cloudy. It walked in actually from the west and was going into a big cedar grove, which I was hunting on the edge of. It walked right past me. The wind was blowing towards me, so it never caught my scent. And it walked out in the shooting lane, and it just stood there looking around like, what the heck is this, you know? And then I made a noise, and it looked at me, and it turned, and about 3 steps it was gone into the woods. I figured it out to be probably a little over 7 foot to 8 foot tall.
Now, how far away would you say you were from this creature?
About 30 feet.
30 feet. And are you looking at it through the scope of your rifle, or are you just looking at it straight on?
Straight on. I actually seen it coming through the woods, and I thought at first it might have been a moose or something big coming in, and it stepped out. I had my gun in the ready, and I couldn't believe what I had seen, and it just shocked me. Prior to that, there was not a lot of knowledge about Bigfoot, other than a few things you'd see on TV, but I knew enough to know what it was.
And when it turned to look at you, describe to us the whole visage of this beast. What did it look like?
It had more of a human-type face. The eyes were dark and big. It had more of a human-type face. It wasn't as hairy as a lot of the pictures I've seen of them. It was more man-like than it was gorilla. That kind of threw me for a loop. Other than the fact it wasn't dressed and it wasn't carrying a gun.
Right. Well, I've been around some drunk hunters before, Michael. There's still a chance that it could have been a human out there roaming around after a long night of imbibing in their cabin and of trying to find their way back home doing the walk of shame through the woods.
Nobody's that ugly.
Well, I've got a couple of family members I'll introduce you to that'll change your theories on that. But you see this creature, and it's covered in hair, but it's not like ape-like hair, you're saying?
No, and they vary from region to region on size and looks. So, you get down south, southern United States, down south they call them skunk apes down there. They can be bigger, smaller, thinner, depending, where you're at in the states here.
All right. Now, after you see this creature, it takes 3 strides. It's back into the woods. Was there any sound? Was there any grunting, howling, that samurai chatter? Was there anything to correspond with the visual sighting?
Well, prior to it, making its appearance, I heard like a chirping sound. I wasn't sure what that was. I grew up basically in the woods since I was a kid hunting and trapping, and I knew just about every sound that, was out there.
Wait a minute, Michael. Yeah. Hunting and what?
Trapping. I used to trap.
Hunt. Oh, trapping. All right. Sorry. We have a bit of a a staticky line. So it sounded like you said you spent a lot of time out there hunting and crapping. And we, Tim and I didn't know if that's...
That too. That,
now the question is answered. Does Michael Hexham crap in the woods? We now know.
So, only if I have to.
Right. So you do trapping. Okay. And hunting out in the woods. But you'd never come across anything like this before.
Never. Never.
Now, would you, obviously, if this area has some Bigfoot in it, there's all these claims of people stumbling upon other animal remains that look like they'd been brutally torn apart. Had that ever happened to you during all those years of trapping, crapping, and walking through the woods? Did you ever find animal pieces that looked like it was brutally attacked as opposed to just, you know, decay and animals feeding off of it?
Well, yes and no. You got to realize the area that I'm in, it was a 55 square mile game preserve, and they opened it up for hunting back in the 70s. So these animals had this whole area to live in, basically unharassed by anybody. So you're talking somebody just wandering in there. It's quite a ways in. It's about six miles in by ATV. But getting back to the bones, yes. And 95 up here, we had a big snow, deep snow. There was a lot of deer kill that winter. And in the spring, I went back into that area. I found quite a few deer. All that would remain was maybe pieces of the back end or whatever. But usually a wolf kill, you'll see teeth marks on the bones, on the back legs when they take the deer down. The ones that I found, they were snapped completely clean. There was no marks on the bones. And Bigfoot will ambush deer. They'll actually block a deer trail. So the deer have to go around the obstacle, and they'll actually ambush them. And usually break the back legs or break the back itself.
All right, now I have to ask, Michael, I'm not an outdoorsman, but you say this with such authority. How do you know that that's what Bigfoot do?
Well,
and I understand I'm not challenging you. It just, I know our listeners are going to be like, well, if we don't have one caught and there's none really on video, how do we know that this is their natural ways of hunting?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 60 years old. Most of my life, like I say, I spent in the woods up in northern Minnesota. So you get to learn things. You get to learn animal signs. You get to learn, you know, what tracks are. You get familiarized with things. And that's just been my experience with my dad out in the woods and my uncle. You know, you'd find a deer kill and you'd see the bite marks or the bones chewed on, which would indicate it's a wolf or even something coming along later and chewing on it.
Right.
But in a couple of instances, I found no marks on the bones at all. Nothing that chewed on it. So how did it die? You can only assume, you know, I don't have definitive proof. But, you know, it just makes sense.
Right. Well, that part I understand. But how do you know that their hunting technique of cutting off the deer trail so that they're forced to go a different way? Is it just from finding that the deer are not near the deer trails? So that's kind of an assumption as to how they must have gotten over to this area?
Well, they're an ambush. And the reason I say that is I've actually followed deer trails looking for deer sheds in the spring. And the trails have been blocked. Well, the trees were broken, you know, crossing the trail. The trees had been broken like 8 feet up. And they were, you know, pretty healthy trees. The wind just didn't do that, especially back in some of the cedar swamps. It's pretty sheltered in there. So something broke these branches, broke these trees, and dropped them on the trail to block the trails. Yeah, unless you actually see one ambushing. I've had other researchers have seen it. So we gain a lot of knowledge by talking to other people. You know, I've learned a lot in the last probably 10 years with Facebook and that, watching videos and talking to other people. You get educated, and I go, oh, yeah, I've had that happen. That explains what this is, you know. So, yeah, there's been other people that have had the same, you know, deal with the ambush.
Mm-hmm.
They're also opportunists. I mean, there's been hunters that have hung their deer up in the tree, 6-7 feet up in the tree, only to return the next day and the deer is gone. You know, there again, what took it? There was no visible signs on the ground, no tracks, you know, indicating like a bear, no other hunters in the area. You know, there again, you can assume that something, you know, Bigfoot possibly came in and grabbed the catch.
But then wouldn't that, okay, you just said a very telling point that there's no tracks. You would now think that Bigfoot is, if he's 7 to 8 feet tall as reported, he's got to be a 300 to 400 to 500 pound beast. And then he's now just taken a deer off of a tree, which is another probably couple hundred pounds, and he's toting it. So now he's, you know, there's possibilities 700 feet. Shouldn't that be leaving some kind of impression or footpath behind it?
It does if you know what to look for. Sometimes, you know, if the ground's frozen and there's no snow, you know, you might see an impression, especially in like the leaves or mossy areas, you can see an impression.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a, for instance, I put trail cams up on deer trails, and I'll get bear, I'll get everything else in there. I put food up on tree branches 7 feet high, and the food's gone. But yet they avoid the trail cams. They avoid, if you were in the woods and you didn't want to be found, you would avoid making your presence known by walking somewhere where you're going to leave an imprint. These creatures are not stupid. They're very smart. They haven't survived all these years by being dumb. And they'll avoid trail cams. The only really good footprints I've ever found were snow tracks, and this was in an isolated area where they had logged off. And the tracks that I found were about 17 inches by about, I want to say, 9 inches wide. I took pictures of them. And they went for probably about 3/4 of a mile and then disappeared into a tamarack swamp where there was no snow, so I couldn't track it any farther than that. But yeah, these creatures were not stupid. You know, I did guiding for bear hunting, so I would rake up the ground around the bear baits. Like, you know, the bears would come in, you could see how big the track was. You know, you could say, oh yeah, this is about a 200-pound bear. You know, this was back before trail cams. I tried the same thing with some of the trails, you know, raking up the ground to get a foot imprint. And they know that. They know what I've done. They know when you're in the area. They know as soon as you step into an area, they know you're there. So.
All right, so you've got this area that seems pretty bustling with Bigfoot. Now, as you start to research in the news, have there been a lot of sightings of these creatures, or is it just these kind of invisible sightings of, you know, I came back and my deer was gone, or my food was gone, or, you know, I heard these noises?
Mm-hmm. I get a lot of reports. We've had reports from the Sheriff's Department in Itasca County, Grand Rapids. In fact, we did an interview one of my fellow teammates, and he's actually the founder of the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team, Abe Del Real. He did an interview with the sheriff, this was in Reamer, I believe, 2 years ago. And so we get a lot of reports up here. You know, it's finding the time. I work a full-time job, so I've got to do all this on the side. And
wait, are you trying to tell me there's not good money in just tracking Bigfoot, Michael?
Well, not unless you get a TV show, I guess. But no, I put a lot of time on my vehicle, a lot of time out in the woods, and I don't get a nickel for it. So, you know, it's just something that I do. Yeah, the Reamer area is a very good spot. They've had a lot of action there. I've done a lot of scouting in that area, Federal Dam. But Nashwauk, Minnesota, north of Nashwauk, northwest along Old Highway 7, I've had 3 reports in the last month. I've got to follow up on them where actually a guy was out in the old mine pit and he's seen it looked like an adult and a juvenile walking around out there. And let's see, we had another one off of 7, a guy and a man and his wife were coming back from their cabin and went across the highway in front of them. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting things. I've had reports. Oh, God, it's going to start picking up now with the weather getting nice.
Michael, let me ask you this. A lot of these sightings, or a lot of sightings around the United States, seem to take place from hunters that are out in their deer stands or out in their duck blinds or whatever, and they experience this. Why do you think seasoned hunters are not taking the opportunity to shoot one of these creatures and I mean, that's going to be a huge find for whoever does it. Why has that not taken place yet, do you think?
Well, there's people out there trying to do that. Our organization is No Kill.
Right.
Yes, I am a hunter, and I was taught by my dad when I was a kid, you make sure of your target. You don't shoot until you know what your target is. And you don't kill something unless you plan to eat it. So I don't plan to eat a Bigfoot. So I have a lot of respect for hunting and fishing. And right. These creatures, I have no... Getting back to that, though, a lot of hunters do see them. It's because they get out in the woods, they're quiet. My encounters that I've had were by accidents. I've never, ever went out in the woods looking for one and found one. Because they know you're there, they hear you. The sightings I've had, I've been quiet in the woods. They were just by accident. We'll go out and get tree knocks. We'll get some yelps and that, but that's about as far as it goes. We've never had an encounter of one out doing research. A couple of the other team members have, but I personally have not.
All right, but why do you think, and I understand your positioning for this, but there are a lot of people that... they hunt. Why do you think no other hunter's really taken a shot at one when it's crossed their path? Do you think they all kind of abide by that same rule that it's just, if I'm not going to eat it, I'm not going to kill it?
Well, to shoot something that looks more human-like than an animal, I don't think a lot of hunters could do that. There again, I've heard stories of hunters that have. I've seen pictures of them, and they're just rare. There's not that many of them. If you see one in the woods, you can consider yourself really lucky.
Now, how many times have you personally witnessed a Bigfoot?
Twice.
All right. The first time was when you said you were about 14 years old?
Hunting, yes.
And when was the second time?
The second time was about this time of year. The cabin that I live in, at the time when I moved back up here, I didn't have running water. So my ritual every morning was to go down to the lake, and I had a hole chopped in the ice. And I'd retrieve water for dishes or for the sauna. And it'd be just at daylight, I'd be going down every day, and I'd bring a cup of coffee and just sit and watch the sun come up. And I noticed out of the northeast, about where the boat landing was, something walked out onto the ice on upright, dark, and it was big. It walked for probably about, 200 to 250 yards and then back into the woods. And it walked really fast. It was watching it. It had no clue I was out there. And then it went into land that a friend of mine owns on the north side of the lake. So after seeing this, I got in the truck and drove over there, and there was no fresh vehicle tracks or foot tracks going in around the gates of the property that it came in and out of. Unfortunately, that time of year, everything was melting. Ice had about 4 inches of slop on it. You really couldn't see anything decent for tracks. And then going into the woods, everything was melting. I did see something that looked like tracks, but they weren't very good. They were kind of marred up with the melting snow and that slush. But that was the second one that I've seen. People say, well, you've seen a bear. Yeah, a bear can walk on two legs. I've seen him do it, but not for 250 yards.
And when you're having an encounter like this, are you looking, or are you so focused on just that one creature? Are you looking around to see if there's anything else moving? If there's anything else in the area that might, kind of tip off how to start realizing when these creatures are around? Was it hunting something, or was it just going out for a quick, brisk walk in the Minnesota air? What do you think it was out there doing?
Well, that time of year, the fishermen were out on the north side of the lake, and they leave their bait. And then also they'll leave fish that they don't want to take home. They'll leave them out there. So I have the eagles fly in. They'll come down and they'll scavenge on the lake. And I'm guessing that's probably what it was doing. And it must have scented I was out there because it didn't stop. It just kept walking and got off between the two properties. There's quite a bit of swamp. And I think it wanted to get more off onto the high ground, easier to get out of there. I wish it would have been like about 2 weeks earlier because we did have quite a bit of snow cover. I could have actually at that point tracked it which way it was going. But yeah, very interesting, very interesting.
Right, and especially to see this for yourself. Now, how does that impact you for the rest of your day and week? I mean, is this something that after you see this, are you just running every scenario in your brain trying to figure out, could it have been a bear? Could it have been a guy in a ghillie suit? Are you doing that as well, or are you pretty well set that what you saw, you knew, was not something that was normal out there?
Well, the way it moved was not a normal pattern of a human, and it would be hard to duplicate, especially the speed it moved. And it wasn't running, it was walking. You know, and the speed it moved, I figured, you know, it probably had at least a 60-inch inseam. It had, you know, it was a tall creature. Yeah, it's like, crap, why don't I have a camera? Because a lot of times I'd bring a camera down there and I'd take pictures of the sunrise. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's...
Well, when you go out, obviously, when you go out tracking bear for hunters or doing what you do, you bring some kind of weapon with you in case you encounter one. What is the object of going out on a Bigfoot hunt? What do you bring with you? Are you loaded for bear, literally? And you say you don't plan on shooting or killing, you're no kill group, but if one of these aggressive Bigfoot started to charge, what's the idea? Do you just drop to the ground like you would a bear and cover your head and pray for the best?
Well, I think you'd be dead regardless if you got a weapon on you, because they are not alone. We'll get to that. Go out in the field. Okay, I'm the old guy. They call me Pops.
Okay.
I'm not a very technical person. I'm more hands-on. I can tell signs. I can tell tracks. The younger guys all carry the infrared and all the other bionic ears and all that. And I always carry a handgun. The reason for that is because we are up in northern Minnesota. You know, you have bear, you have moose. I've been treed by a moose once. And not that I would shoot the animal, but it makes one hell of a noise when you fire it in the air.
I've been treed by a moose. You are yet again proof of why I don't want to go outdoors. To be true, moose are flipping huge. It's off the beaten path. What is it like? I mean, what are you walking around? All of a sudden, a moose starts a charge and you just have to scramble up a tree?
Well, I was actually scouting on an area for bear hunting, for doing guiding and that. And I ran across a cow moose and her yearling. And I'd say the cow was probably about 900 pounds. And it hit the ground, snorted, and I seen a tree up in the distance. I go, okay, I can make that. And I got up into the tree, walked around the tree for about 15 minutes, stomping the ground, and then finally got tired of it and walked away. Shotgun, yeah, I had a shotgun. I was leaning up against the tree about 30 yards away because I wasn't in the grouse hunt. So all I could do was yell at that point and try to get it to leave me alone, so... But yeah, I always carry a handgun in the woods. We have mountain lion up here now. I've seen them twice. And they are an ambush predator.
Yeah.
And I've seen back in an area where I do a lot of scouting around in there. I found fresh tracks last fall, mountain lion tracks. So the other guys carry that bear spray, pepper spray, and I laugh. I said, I don't want to be that close to anything that I have to spray it in the face.
Right.
I'd rather shoot a couple rounds up in the air and scare it away versus, and then run like hell.
Yeah. Yeah. What's better for me is just letting you go hunt them and tell me your stories. That's the way I feel about it, Michael.
Yeah.
It's better than...
As far as them being aggressive,
right.
The area I've been in, and since before the 70s, late 60s, they know who I am. They know I'm in there.
Mm-hmm.
If they wanted to harm me, they could have done it years ago. And I've had tree knocks around me. I know when they're in there. I can hear them. They'll do tree knocks. 2 years ago, I was in there cutting a trail open, and I heard the samurai chatter. There was two of them. And I just stopped dead in my tracks. And it was about 30 yards to the south of me, and they were separated. They were talking to each other. And within a 20-minute span, they were actually together talking. I could hear this moaning around, like a mumbling talk. And the brush in that was still pretty thick. It was in September. I really couldn't see in there. And my first idea was, well, maybe I should walk in there. And I started thinking, no, I'm in about 6 miles all by myself. probably not a good idea to go in the house. Stay where I'm at. And after about 20 minutes, the chattering, the talk sound ended. And so I went, I went on my way clearing the trail out. But, you know, I still stood looking behind me every 2 minutes. So,
right.
Uneasy feeling. And another way, if they don't want you in the area, they can use infrasound. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Right, but I guess I didn't know that that was associated with Bigfoot. So infrasound, for our listeners that are not familiar, explain to us what that is and how they utilize it.
Well, so it's a low-frequency sound. We cannot hear it, but we can feel it. I believe gorillas and lions are capable of doing it. My first experience with infrasound was I went into an area that was swamp, and it's just like walking into a park. And I was hunting, and I had a rifle with me and a pistol, and I'm standing there, and I got the feeling of dread. I couldn't get out of there fast enough. It was like something wasn't right, and believe me, nothing was going to hurt me. I'm armed to the teeth, but I couldn't get out of there fast enough. It was just a feeling of danger, something. Once I got out of the area, I was fine. Abe Del Rio, he did an overnight over by Reamer area, and he experienced infrasound. We actually went to the ER thinking he was having a heart attack. Kind of interesting. We did, I did all the scouting up here in this area for Finding Bigfoot show, which aired 2 years ago. So I took the team, Bobo, the whole team back into an area. And we had quite the camera crew in there. We did get a tree knock. I went into that same area the following fall to do some hunting, and I felt like I too was having a heart attack. I got out of the stand I was in. I walked to where I had my ATV parked. As soon as I got there, I felt fine. I walked back into the stand. For the rest of the day, I was having anxiety attacks. Once I got out of the stand in the afternoon, I was fine. Once I got out of the area, once again, I was fine. So I'm a firm believer in infrasound. They don't want you in an area. They'll do that. And then the following morning, I went into the same area, got back up into the deer stand, and for the first half an hour, I had stuff thrown at me in the dark, tree branches, rocks. I could hear it crashing through the branches and hitting the ground. And then once the daylight came, it quit. And I did hear something big moving away from me as soon as it started getting light, but I couldn't see anything. Well, there's not too many things out in the woods, especially where I'm at. I don't have to worry about hoaxing. So it was something big throwing stuff at me in the dark. But it definitely didn't want me in there.
Do you think, are the wood knocks a way of them communicating with each other, or is it like a rattlesnake? You're getting close, so bang, 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 they're trying to get you to take off and leave them alone?
No. What it is communication. I've heard tree knocks throughout the years. I never knew what they were until I started talking to other researchers, and then I got educated on them. What they'll do is, what they usually do is, they're in groups. They're not individuals. So they have what they call day watchers. That's what we call them. They have them to stand guard. And the rest of the group sleeps during the day, and then they primarily hunt at night, do whatever they got to do at night. These day guards or watchers, day watchers, if something comes in an area, they'll alert the group by doing a tree knock. Usually three tree knocks, in my opinion, is a danger. You know, something is in there. I've had them do one tree knock because they don't know what I am, and they're soliciting a response from me. So what do? I usually respond with two knocks. And believe me, when you go into an area, they know you're in there. You're noisy. You come in either in a vehicle or you're walking, but they're aware that you're there. We've actually drew them in close. They were probably within, I've had them within maybe 100 yards of me, and you could hear them moving around. When we did the show Finding Bigfoot, we were back there. We did get a tree knock, and then for about half an hour, we had something that was walking parallel to us to the west. We could hear it crashing and moving. at that point, they asked me, well, you think it's a bear? And I said, no, bear up here are not used to humans. If they scent you, they get out of there. They don't stick around. Moose, I don't think a moose would hang around that long. But we had gotten a tree knock prior to that. And it was Cliff, Matt, Moneymaker, and myself were in one group. And we're the ones that got the tree knock. And then one of the cameramen had to go back to base camp, and he freaked out. He got followed through the woods. You could hear something following him. So it was a very cool night. It was fun.
We need to take a break. We'll hear about this. And I'd like to hear about your working with the guys from the BFRO and finding Bigfoot. What was that like? You know, there's quite a line, a very polarizing line of people that think that show was helpful and others that believe that that show did nothing but damage the field of crypto investigations. Let's get our guests' take on that when we return.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to the show. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. So, Tim, what do you think? You want, when your summer's up and your leg's feeling better, should I send mm-hmm. you up to Reamer and you could go hang out with Michael and investigate claims of Bigfoot?
Sure.
Yeah? You're going to help knock trees?
Sure.
Yeah?
What am I knocking it with?
I don't know. Your leg? Your cast?
Sure, with the big old crow walker boot?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. See, there's a lot of activity. You brought up Reamer at the beginning of the show.
Right.
And how popular it seems to be for a Bigfoot. It must be like a vacation destination for Sasquatch.
Well, you know, the world famous story about Reamer actually has to do with Michael's colleague, Abe Del Rio.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, we'll shake his tree and see if he can tell us that story as well. Okay. Let's go back. Michael Hexam, our guest. Michael, you worked with the Bigfoot research organization, the cast and crew of the TV show Finding Bigfoot. And as I said, there seems to be this interesting kind of division bell in Bigfoot camps, where some believe that it was a show that did nothing but hurt the field, and others believe it was great because it brought so much more attention and interest. Where do you fall on that line, especially after you had a chance to work with them behind the scenes?
Well, that was a very interesting week, to say the least. No, I believe it's helped. It's spiked more interest. I believe there's more teams out there now looking in hopes that we can prove that they do exist and then at least get them protected or at least get some of the habitat protected the way they're deforestation, especially up here in northern Minnesota. I mean, logging's a good thing, but I think they're overdoing it. But that's our goal, is to prove they exist and then get them protected and make sure that they can live, you know, on... They can live free, put it that way. Freer.
Well, they're living pretty free of us already, don't you think, Michael? Nobody's shot one. Nobody's killed one. They're kind of doing what they want to do and living where they want to live anyway. Should we just leave a species like that alone so that they're not being bothered?
You can do that, but you know, people encounter them.
Right.
It's something that... how can I say, it's an addiction. I get out in the woods. I can be out there at 2 a.m. The mosquitoes are so bad that you can't stand it. But, you know, just to find a sign or to hear a tree knock, you know, I encounter them whether I see them or not. I know they're in the area. You know, I'm not looking to harm one. I'm just looking to understand what they are. They're, again, like the deforestation. Eventually, the way things are going, they're going to lose critical habitat. So if we can prove that they do exist, you know, maybe it will help out in that respect. Now, you know, different researchers have different views right. on it.
Right, and just kind of getting them out there and trying to get some answers. What do you think would happen when and if we do prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, whether you find a body or an injured Bigfoot or one is finally trapped, what do you think will actually or eventually happen from that point going forward? Will that change the way the world runs as it comes to cryptids and Bigfoot? Or, you know, how do you think that's going to play out?
It might change how our way of evolution is thought of. It could be possibly, I believe, a missing link of some sort. It came across the land bridge from Europe, back before that, all the continents shifted in that. Because Russia, they have the same things. Some areas in Europe, they're getting sightings. It could change a lot. I was approached by a DNR guy last summer who wanted to know what I knew about Bigfoot, or if there's something I could tell him. And I, in return, asked him, I said, well, what do you know that you're not telling me? He wouldn't tell me anything, so it's okay. You're not telling me, I'm not going to tell you. That's the way it works. Well, I find out later from another guy that they had actually photographed one along the power lines from a helicopter. So, the government, in my opinion, know they exist. What would happen if somebody actually got one? I don't know. There are different scenarios of what the government might or might not do. I'm not going to get into politics. But I would hope they would do the right thing.
Well, Tim was alluding to the fact that one of your compatriots in the Bigfoot field up there in Reamer had a pretty substantial story and a sighting. Are you familiar with that story?
Which one?
Abe Del Rio.
Abe, very good guy, yes. Abe and I, he's the founder of the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team. Very, very straight-up person. Very good person to work with. I trust my back with him in the woods at all times. The story that I know of, I wasn't able to make it that trip because of work. They had a sighting along a lake up there by a guy and his wife that were guides, and Abe went up to do an investigation, in which case he witnessed infrasound where he felt like he was getting sick, and he ended up in the ER. So, that's part of what I was talking about, the infrasound. Is that the story you're referring to?
I'm not quite sure, but I just
knew that Abe had one of the biggest well-known stories.
Yeah,
up
one
there.
Of the most well-known stories of a Bigfoot sighting up there in Reamer. Yeah.
Well, we've had a lot of sightings. There was one with the guy out in the canoe fishing, and the Bigfoot was along the lake shore and wouldn't let him land the canoe.
Did he have a violent encounter with Bigfoot up there in Reamer?
Did Abe?
Yeah.
Other than maybe the infrasound, that'd be about the only one I know of. I don't always go out with the rest of the team. I know they've had some encounters. I don't believe any of them have been violent, or I would have probably heard about it.
All right, so you were saying about the let's go back to the one you were just talking about, and then to finish up with the story on the infrasound one that Abe dealt with as well, because I'd like to hear both of those stories.
Mm-hmm. What story, the canoe?
Yes, let's go back to the canoe, and then we'll double back.
Yeah, this was Reamer days. We were up there. That's in July now, if you guys want to show up for that. But yeah, they had several people come in, and they were interviewed by the cast of Finding Bigfoot. And one of the guys, which later our team did interview him, and I believe it's on one of our videos we have on our site. But yeah, the guy described his encounter, and basically this thing paced back and forth on the shoreline, and he couldn't get his canoe in. He actually got on a cell phone and called his brother-in-law, I believe who it was, that came and eventually pulled into the area and sounded his horn or whatever, scaring this thing off. And they did find tracks. I've seen the tracks. That was also at that deal in Reamer. The infrasound, like I say, with Abe, it was I didn't make it to that overnight. So all I know is what I was told, you know, with him going to the ER, being checked out, and he came out good. There was no problems with him. So, yeah, I'm a firm believer in infrasound. They want you out of an area, they'll definitely do that as a first reader, I think, and then the second, they'll get a little more aggressive as far as, like, shaking trees or throwing things.
So that's kind of the next evolution of it. As you keep getting closer, they get to be a little bit more violent in their aggression towards letting you know they don't want you around.
Yeah, we had last fall, we had a guy that was fishing on a lake north of me, and I know the lake very well. It's a remote lake. And he got a hold of me. Him and his grandson were out fishing, and something was throwing the rocks and tree limbs out in the lake at him. They were along the shoreline fishing for bass. And so I went out there a few days later towards dusk by myself, and I did some pre-knocks, and I didn't hear or see anything. But this guy, I know he's pretty reliable, you know, not to make up a story or anything like that, but I personally didn't see anything, but that's on my list to do an overnight in that area, go in there and actually camp all night in there, and, you know, try to see if we can get a response from a tree knock or something would come in and actually, you know, put the campsite itself and throw something or.
Now, when you're doing this kind of work, too, and you're putting yourself out there looking for this, is there anything that you use as an attractant, as bait for Bigfoot? Is there anything that you found that does seem to get their attention?
No, I don't. Some of the other team members carry, I forget what it's called. It is kind of an attractant. I don't. What I have done is kind of I've left gifts. There's a tree stump that I put food on, and when I know they're there or when they come into the area, they will leave something in return on the stump. I found a pelvis bone from a deer on the stump. I found rocks piled up on the stump. It's kind of a gift. I know it sounds crazy, but, you know, it's, and there again, it's in an area where the odds of somebody finding that spot are a million to one, you know. There's people, another trick, take a jar of peanut butter, screw the lid on, have a screw through the lid, put it into a tree branch. If you get into that area and the lid is, you know, the jar is unscrewed and gone, then you got something that has an opposable thumb that actually taken. I've heard people doing that. Garlic, that's another thing. People leave garlic up on a tree branch because that is like a natural cure-all. They will take garlic, I've been told. I haven't tried that one yet, but I'm going to get some garlic and put it up on a branch and see if that disappears. But there again, you know, you put trail cams out, they won't come near them.
There's enough other things that, you know, trail cams might be too, you know, intrusive. Is there a way of snapping, you know, a couple of those GoPros into a couple of different trees and areas where maybe they wouldn't notice them? It doesn't have that same look, you know, it doesn't rely on the same frequency. Maybe that would be a better way to go about trying to videotape and get some conclusive evidence that these beasts are walking amongst us.
Yeah, there has been. I've seen one real good footage. The guy was camping and there was one outside of his tent and it was going through his cooler looking for food, and he actually stuck his cell phone through the window of the tent and filmed it. And the only thing I can think of, it must have been a juvenile. They're not real smart. Those are the ones you usually see, are young ones, because they don't have the common sense. They're more curious. But yeah, you know, I'm not a real high-tech person. From what I understand, a lot of these camcorders give off a sound that, like, I'm not sure what kind of sound it is, but it can be heard by them. Also, too, you know, that's their area. So, I mean, if you walk out in your backyard and you see a candy wrapper laying on the ground, you'll notice it because that's your backyard. A lot of times these areas we go, that's where they frequent. If there's something that's not right, they pick up on it right away. You know, if there's something out of place or whatever.
Well, what are some of your other, as you're talking about this, what are some of the other stories that you've collected? I know our time's running out here, but just trying to get some more of the history and some of the other encounters that you've talked to. And is there anything that sets off your radar that once you get there, you realize this guy's just looking for attention, or that you don't believe it's really a Bigfoot?
Well, you just got to, I try to read people. You know, I ask a million questions. What time of day? What was the sunlight? Where was it? We had an overnight we did over by Iron River. This gal had supposedly seen Bigfoot on her property. So we did an overnight there. And it turned out that she wasn't seeing Bigfoot. She was seeing what you call a windwalker, a ghost. And so I walked the property with her at about sunrise. We were walking, the light was just coming up, and she goes, "There's one looking at us now." And I walked over to the spot. It turned out to be a burned-out log. And she had pointed out like a half a dozen different things that she thought was a ghost or whatever. And I'm the type of guy, well, I'll find an explanation out for it. Same with tracks. And I can tell what a track is. So by the end of the morning, she told me, she goes, "This is the first time I've walked through my property without being scared." There was an explanation for what she had seen. And I don't know about ghosts. I personally have never witnessed one, but I believe they exist. In the line of work I do, you have to keep an open mind.
Right.
A very open mind, or you're going to get nowhere. And I can usually tell when people are giving me a line of BS or when they're sincere.
Well, I want to hear, I want to hear some more of the encounter stories, but I also want to remind our listeners, if you want to get out and investigate and see some cool stuff yourself, remember to check out darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com in Australia. Yeah, I'm talking to you, Australia. I'm coming out there in June to be a part of the Australia Paracon, which will be taking place at the quarantine station. You can find information at darknessevents.com, and I hope that you'll come on out and have a good time with us. They have a lot of great speakers, investigations planned, and more. Check it out again at darknessevents.com, or you can come out with me on our we do a European or a foreign trip every year with Beyond the Darkness. This year we're back to Romania, and I think this is our final trip to Romania because there are so many other great places we want to see, but we're going to do one more big trip to Romania to bring in all the people that have been with us on the last four or five trips that haven't had a chance to see that. And we're already 3/4 of the way sold out on it. We're going to be following in the steps of Vlad the Impaler, the original Dracula. And we're going to follow in his history and stories. Plus, we get to investigate two castles that he is associated with. We get to investigate the Baisu Forest, the haunted Baisu Forest, which is also known to have UFO activity, cryptids, ghosts, and more. And just a great time. So check it all out at darknessevents.com, darknessevents.com. And for those of you that are just interested in seeing cool places, Tim, we're going to be in Tombstone, Arizona.
Yeah.
What is it? The end of June, right?
End of June.
End of June for the 25th anniversary of the movie Tombstone. Michael Biehn, who played Johnny Ringo, will be on hand. They have some other celebrity guests that will be there. And Tim and I will be, where is it? I think we're going to be recording an episode live from the Birdcage Theater.
Yep.
And there's another haunted bed and breakfast or a hotel that we're going to be staying in that we're going to do an episode from while we're out there. And those will air the following week.
Mm-hmm.
But that ought to be pretty neat. I've never been to Tombstone. Have you ever been out there?
No, it'll be fun.
All right. So we're going to get a chance to go out there and we're going to get to do a little investigating. So sign up. Come on out. Have a good time. Celebrate the 25th anniversary of Tombstone, Arizona with us. And all that information, again, will be on our website at darknessevents.com. Michael Hexum, our guest this evening, as we're talking about Bigfoot, our Minnesota monster man, chatting with us about some of the stories that he's collected and his own experiences. Michael, in wrapping up in the episode, let's hear a couple more of the I don't want to say unbelievable because then it sounds like I don't believe them, but some of the more outstanding encounters that you've collected from, you know, experiencers.
Well, personally, I've been followed in the woods. I got a call from a guy here last year about this time. It seems like March is a happening time, but he had three knocks. So I went out on his property and I did a couple of knocks, and he goes, "Yeah, they sounded just like that," about 2 a.m. And he says, "Well, why are they hanging around here?" I said, "Well, you got about 90 chickens running around. Why do you think they're hanging around? I'm surprised you don't have coyotes and wolves hanging around here." But funny story, I had three gals up here one weekend. I have a big bunkhouse net up here where I put people up for hunting. These gals were up, and they convinced me to take them out about 11 o'clock at night. So I took them out to an area where we'd gotten snow tracks the winter before that. So we're out there doing tree knocks at about 11:30, quarter to 12 at night. And they're laughing and giggling, and they're, you know, they're thinking, oh, this is all a bunch of BS, but they're having a good time. All of a sudden, we get a loud knock, and it's probably 50 yards to the north of us. The big mistake I made is I let them hold the flashlight. So all three of them take off running down the trail, leaving me in the dark. And I got this thing, whatever it is, it's getting closer. Well, luckily, I had my cell phone. I was able to open that up, and I had just enough light that I could see the path to get out of there. But I made believers out of them. They were sitting in the vehicle with the doors locked, and they wanted to get the heck out of there. But that was probably one of the funniest encounters I ever had. And that definitely was a real one single tree knock. And there again, what drew them in? It could have been female. I don't know.
What?
You know,
oh, right.
It seems like female researchers can sometimes get a better response than the males. And, you know, there's a lot of theories behind that, too. You know, I don't have time to get into all that, but I always seem to have luck if I bring a female out more so than, you know, a male. And I think it's more of a curiosity, maybe to the younger ones, but there again, you know, to try to get a visual, we'll get like a tree knock or you'll hear something moving. I guess they just aren't that curious.
Well, you heard it here, folks. If you want to get lucky with Michael Hexham, you can go out Bigfoot hunt. Wait, that came out wrong. But if you want to go on out and investigate. Now, do you take people on Bigfoot expeditions as well as bear hunts and all the rest of the wild game you seek?
I have. I took NPR News out. And there again, I had Abe Del Rio went with me because he knows a lot of stuff I don't, you know, the more technical and that and scientific. And we took NPR News out. We did an overnight with them, and they ran a story in the video. And then that kind of got everything rolling for the Reamer. Right now, I believe our team is taking people out. You'd have to look up the website.
And we'll put a link up to the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team Facebook page on today's post as well. So if you're listening to today's episode, just check out the posting and you'll see the link for them.
Yeah, I have taken people out. You know, I can't guarantee anything. That's it. But, you know, we have gotten free knocks. You know, I bring people out. We're going to see Bigfoot.
Are there any other animals that would do that? Do bears push on trees, knock on trees? How about pileated woodpeckers? Are there any of these things that might be creating those noises that, you know, we would mistake as it being a Bigfoot, but it's really just another natural example?
Well, there again, woodpeckers have a different sound. Most of the tree knocks I heard were kind of like timed. You hear a boop, and then a boop, and then a boop. I actually thought somebody was hammering a nail one time, and they're definitely there are no animals making that type of noise. You know, late in winter, too, trees will actually pop. You'll hear a popping noise, and that's very similar to a tree knock, but it's usually one pop, and you can usually tell it's sap freezing and, you know, the tree actually popping. But, you know, there again, spending as much time as I do up here and out in the woods, you learn different things. That's kind of why I'm useful for the team. I know a lot of things that they don't know. We've got two other guys from north of me are very, very gifted woodsmen. And I'm glad to have them on the team as well because they know things I don't know. And it's good to have people out in the woods with you that know what's going on, you know, just in case something were to happen, you know.
Right. Well,
yeah,
obviously,
We got a good team. We got a hell of a good team. We got a great bunch of people, and I'm proud to be part of the team.
Well, Michael, thanks for sharing some insights and some of the stories, your own encounters with this, and please keep us in mind as more stories come in this summer and spring and people are encountering things, and if you have your own encounters, reach out to us. We'd love to have you back on and get an update.
Well, I'll tell you this. You guys want to do an overnight this summer, let me know.
All right, we'll work it out. Actually, you know what? I have a gentleman who I think would like to join us for that. He is. Have you ever watched that show? Oh gosh, now what's the name of that show, Tim? With the Jeff Dyer and Terry Bradshaw and Henry Winkler. It's like their bucket list show where they go out and Better Late Than Never. That's what it's called. Mm-hmm. Jeff Dyer, the comedian and actor, is a huge Bigfoot fan and had told me, you're ever going to go out on a Bigfoot investigation, I'd love to join you. So let me know and I'll touch base with him. Maybe he can come on out and join us for a night and we'll check it out.
Mm-hmm. Who's that, Jeff Dyer?
Yeah. Or Jeff Dye, I believe is his name, right? Jeff Dye? Yeah.
I don't watch a lot of television. So.
Yeah, yeah. I know you're busy out in the upper north there. You have a hard time with any kind of transmission, so I'm thankful that we were able to get through to you on your phone today for this long period of time.
Yeah, I'm amazed. I'm amazed that I've been able to talk this long without interruption, because normally if I do any type of radio show, I got to drive into town. So.
Well, very good. Well, thank you. And again, Minnesota Bigfoot research team he's a part of. We'll have links up to that. And we'll look forward to talking to you, Michael. And yeah, I'm all for it. I joked around at the beginning of the show, but I'm all for it. I would come out for a night. I would love to hear these tree knocks or whoops and see if there's something we can actually experience.
Yeah, it'd be fun. Bring bug spray.
Yeah. I'm just going to wear one of those beekeeper outfits and like one of those CDC hazmat suits. That's just the best way, so I don't get eaten alive by destructive mosquitoes. Michael, thanks a lot. Have a great rest of your evening. And that's it for this week's show, folks. Thanks a lot for tuning in and being a part of tonight's show. We will be back again Friday with another brand new edition of the best at Paranormal Talk Radio. Plus, kind of a new twist on our Theater of the Mind, Tim, that we'll leave as a little secret for Friday's show. How about that?
Sounds good.
All right, that's it for us. Take care, be kind, love one another. We'll talk to you again on Friday here on Beyond the Darkness.